Let's Talk Letts, an original podcast from the Lettings Hub.
Hello, and welcome to the latest episode of our podcast, Let's Talk Letts. I'm Heidi Shackle, the CEO of the Lettings Hub, the tenant referencing business that got good at tech. And Let's Talk Letts is our regular roundup of news and views on a whole range of subjects spanning the private rented sector.
Today, we're going to talk about the growing fraud challenge faced by letting agents and landlords, and provide some of our top tips on how to detect fraud and how technology and good data and brilliant people can help with this. Plus, we'll quickly cover the options there are out there to fully protect landlords against fraudulent tenants to give you total peace of mind. We know some of you will be completing checks in-house on your tenants, and others will be outsourcing to a provider. It may be us, thank you very much, or somebody else. So we've tried to cover top tips that may help yourself, that may help you or your colleagues complete as part of their referencing. It may be that you do further checks in-house, or obviously you can ask your current provider exactly what they do for you. So starting at the beginning, there are three types of fraud, and there are also three methods of fraud. So we'll come on to those in a second. The first one is tenants who are deceptively obtaining a property, usually for the purposes of criminal activity. We obviously want to stop those. I'm sure we've very much all heard stories about cannabis farms, brothels, but we now also have emerging examples of county line gangs operating from rental properties, or even really obviously sad stories about human trafficking and exploitation to contend with. The second type, we have tenants that always had the intention to live at the property rent-free. And with the court system as it currently is, they know that they can probably do that for quite some time before possession is granted. This type of fraud is actually a little bit tricky to detect as a letting agent or landlord. And usually when a tenant like this is finally removed from the property, there isn't really a long-term impact to that tenant. Obviously, our standard court process at the moment does not register a CCJ against them that could be picked up on a future credit check or future referencing. And there's no kind of central rental database to record them on. They usually try and do it all over again, just in a different property or a different location. And then we have tenants that just falsify information. So this is probably the fastest growing category, and in no small part due to the cost of living crisis, but also because it's actually easier than ever to falsify information about yourself, to get hold of very realistic, fake or forged documents, and it's not even actually illegal to buy them. So how do people do it? To add the slight complexity, there are different methods to do it that will perpetrate fraud, but these I'll explain now. So the first one is stealing somebody's entire identity. For example, somebody could intentionally steal the identity of someone who has recently passed away. And that's kind of a practice known as ghosting. A fake made-up identity, fraudsters can kind of create a synthetic identity, or thousands of them actually, using fake addresses, phone numbers, and all social media accounts is another classic. And they also can then just falsify some details of your own identity, where a person might lie or exaggerate on elements of their identity or profile. For example, exaggerating your income to pass an affordability check. So very much battling the fraud enemy in its different types and methods and forms is going to take a lot more than one single weapon. It's estimated now that 82 billion of UK rental property is occupied by either fraudsters or criminals. Fraudsters are very much becoming increasingly more sophisticated, so we very much all need to up our game and use a variety of tools to catch them. And I've listed some of them along the bottom here. I actually forgot to say at the start, if you have questions, you will see it on your screen. You can kind of add to them at any time, and we will answer them or answer some of them, depending on how many we have at the end. A few of you have already sent in some questions ahead of the webinar today, so we also have some of those answers ready for you as well. So the good news is, I guess, is what we have to establish about a tenant is still very much pretty much the same as it always has been. Landlords still want great tenants who will pay their rent and look after their asset. And to do this, we need as much certainty as possible on four things. We need to establish, are they who they say they are? Do they then have the financial capability to pay the rent? And will they pay the rent? And whilst they're living there, are they going to look after the landlord's asset? What's more important now in the face of fraud is how you or your referencing provider answers those questions and what information and data is being used, what technology is being used to help, and what is incorporated into the process, and what type of guarantee does that really give you as an agent when it's so vital at the moment that you keep hold of your landlords and offer them a fantastic service. So if we start, we're going to look at how we can ascertain who they are and are they say they who they are. And we do that by mainly looking at identity and residency information and verification. This is where data and technology play a huge part together. So it's actually what a tenant isn't telling you that can be the most revealing. So the one thing I would always say is make sure you put them through the process, even if they come in and present documentation to you or advise they're coming from overseas, etc. You need to ask them these questions. So just a few top tips really here, which is when I've done a fraud presentation in the past, the feedback that we've had is giving some of these little snippets, I suppose, into some of the things that go on into fraud checking has been the most useful for agents. So I wanted to include quite a few here for you. So the first check is, you know, it sounds the most basic one. It's actually one of the most important based on how we explained earlier how fraud can take effect, is we need to check that they are alive. And we still have the situation where people go through obituaries in the paper or use a family member or friend that's recently deceased to steal their identity. We then need to look at, from the addresses that they say they have been living at or they're currently living at, do those addresses exist and have we found them at that property? Most people now, even with a mobile phone bill, will have credit or some form of identity registered at a specific address. Where we see people try and cheat the system are places like where they say, oh, I live on number 146, the High Street. But actually, the properties in that row only go up to 145, and 146 doesn't exist at all. So actually, there is going to be no fraud found at that address. So using kind of links to linked addresses becomes really, really important. The other key thing here is their landlord who they actually claim to be? I think we've all come across situations in the past where somebody has said they're living with friends and family, or they're in a situation where they say that they're in a private landlord residence. And when we then go to obtain referencing from that landlord, there is doubt as to whether it's obviously their friend, etc. We run a whole variety of tests and checks behind the scenes, but they will include things like, you know, checking the IP address of the applicant submitting an application form isn't the same as obviously any of their referees, for example, because often they pretend to be the landlord themselves and just have two different phone numbers. But what we also do is we ask different questions that a fake landlord wouldn't often know, such as when did they buy the property? How much did they buy it for? Is it freehold or leasehold? What's down the street? What's next to the property? What colour's the front door? And ask information that can really often catch people off guard. Can you establish a social profile for somebody? I think most people now have some social presence, and especially in some of the professions that we reference, LinkedIn is fairly common. So what they're saying on their application form, is it tying up exactly with what we can see online, and how old is that profile? So what we don't want to see is a profile that's been established in the last few weeks or in the last few months. And actually, we don't want to find companies that have been established long after the person says that they've worked there. So looking at their social profile and matching it up to what you've seen when you've potentially met them or what they've said is becoming really, really important. And actually, are they willing to do an online digital identity verification check? It's actually easier than ever to do that, and it's the most simplest way to prove who you are and where your income, which we'll come on to, actually comes from. So if somebody isn't willing to do that, you've got to kind of ask yourself why. As long as you have a really simple, seamless customer journey for them, they actually should be welcoming the fact that it becomes really easy. They can do it off their mobile phone device and they can do it within a couple of minutes. Okay, so just moving on, whether you outsource your tenant vetting or do it yourself, you should be looking at tech solutions as well as any human solution when it comes to verifying a person's identity. The Home Office now recommends that businesses all use a certified IDSP provider to do their digital identity checks. And doing this ensures that the provider meets all the standards and guidance laid out in the Digital Identity and Attributes Trust Framework, which basically means it protects you. Another good check is to make sure the provider or tech can verify customers from all over the world, not just people from the UK. And for example, our Know Your Customer, Right to Rent tools actually translate into 27 different languages so people can easily go through the process, and they work for anybody from anywhere in the world. Like I mentioned before, making sure that customer journey is really seamless through one system and a fully integrated journey where somebody isn't having entering multiple pieces of information to different places also, I think, becomes really important and protects the reputation of you as the agency, not making it difficult for a tenant to get in the property, and also for the referencing company or your in-house referencing team to cross-check and validate all of the information that's been provided in one place. And also look to your provider to understand what range of identity verification tools that they're actually using. There's lots of examples here on the screen, like identity and residency verification, as we've spoken about, but liveness checks, biometric facial recognition. If you imagine that, going back to the first risk of somebody being deceased, that's impossible to copy. Document validation, technology, database searches, right to rent, digital footprint searches, PEPs and sanctions, financial watch lists, it goes on and on. And actually, making somebody aware that you're going to check them against all of those things, a lot of fraudsters are not sophisticated enough to cover their tracks against everything. And if your referencing provider or your Know Your Customer, Right to Rent provider has all of this, they should be willing to stand by their decisioning, give you guarantees against fraud, pay Home Office fines, whatever it may be, so that you can pass that level of certainty and confidence to your landlord. So just a few final tips on who make sure the tenant is who they say they are. So detection systems to identify document inconsistencies is ever increasing. There's some fantastic tech solutions on the market, not just in our industry, but very much across the board. But don't forget, you can also do some really basic checks yourself to look at document creation dates and legitimacy. So even if you don't have that in-house, you can do some things yourself. We, for example, have a massive bank of documents. So, you know, what a NatWest bank statement does look like, what a fake payslip does look like, because we've been on all of the sites and you can purchase them and you can see that they all look exactly, you know, from the different sites, they all look very similar as they come through. So doing that, if you've had a situation or you want to kind of build up a little bank, it's quite useful. Consistency checking is the next thing to mention. We obviously have the luxury of kind of referencing millions of tenants in the past. So we hold all of that data. And the first thing we do when we put a tenant through the system is do a previous referencing cross-check. So we see if we've referenced them before. If we have, we're going to check the information is the same as it was before, and we're going to check for any massive inconsistencies. Income 1 year ago was £10,000. We're now looking at £100,000. The address history has changed. We actually flagged them for fraud before. We declined them only 1 month ago, and now their circumstances have totally changed. We also, and also offer this to our clients as well, that if there has been a situation where we then have to evict a tenant or we have found fraud, and hopefully stopped it, because that obviously happens every single day. Any referee or personal information that has been used in creating that fake identity or fake information, we hold that on a database, and again, the system automatically does a cross-check against that. Because what we definitely find in our industry is, you know, one pretend fake company gets created and then multiple people will use it. And often that company looks like a very well-known one, or a very well-known one in your local space. That's also a common trick. And also, from a consistency point of view, we obviously have a look and we think, does it make sense? Based on the role that this person does and how old they are, or how long they've been doing the job, or based on where the job is located, does it all kind of tie up as to what we're seeing on that application form? I mentioned a little bit earlier about the overseas check, but when I have spoken to some of our clients in the past and I say, why did you not reference that tenant? And they'll say, oh, that's because they say they've just come in from overseas and they don't have a UK credit file. We would say put everybody through the process, because that is another good way of kind of circumnavigating, I suppose, the process. That person may well have just arrived in the UK and not have a detrimental UK credit record, but they might, and you might find something. So definitely don't fall for that trick. And also remember, on the identity checking, it works for everybody, whether they have just been arrived in the UK or have not long been here. So you should put them through it anyway. And also do your own pre-tenancy questions. You've obviously made the decision and to kind of recommend these tenants. In doing so, you will have found out some information yourself. Ask them information, and they will have obviously told you a story, probably at viewing or trying to book their viewing. So just make sure that what you now see on your final referencing report is totally in line, with what you've kind of said, they've said before. Okay, so moving on, we're now going to have a look at, do they have the financial capability to pay? Now, when a few years ago now, open banking came into the letting space, and it has been a huge game changer in fraud detection. And if you're outsourcing your referencing to a third party and they don't have a fully integrated open banking solution as standard, then your fraud exposure is instantly much higher. I would say out of all of the tools we use to detect fraud, open banking is up there with one of the top. Now on here it says 7 out of 10 tenants consent to open banking. And actually at the moment we're seeing 76% of tenants, we're seeing a slightly lower proportion of guarantors. 76% of tenants now provide consent to their bank account or multiple bank accounts for us to be able to check them. And fraudulent tenants are significantly less likely to consent to open banking, because as much as they want to be able to change and fake a bank statement, it is much easier for them to trick a person by doing that than it is being able to get straight into their bank account. And there is huge benefits to it. So a tenant that doesn't consent to open banking should raise high suspicions. And we use open banking data, and I'll just kind of show you actually some of the things that we see. It might be a little bit difficult to see. I hope you can see it. But it really does demonstrate that at the click of a button, when a tenant or a guarantor gives us access to have one snapshot of their bank, we're not in their bank kind of having a nosy around. It basically pulls back the information that we need at one point in time. And it not only gives us an income breakdown or rental or mortgage commitments, bank transfers, utility payments, cash withdrawals, it gives us all of things like this. It also shows up things like credit commitments, missed payments, loans and credit cards, and actually looks overall at an individual's financial landscape, as well as the detail of the money coming in and out of their bank. Now, in most instances, all we're interested in is to make sure that we can verify the income coming into their bank account, and actually, if they're paying rent, we can obviously see that going out as well. But where we have cases of borderline affordability or anything that kind of rises suspicion, it allows us to have a little bit of a deeper look into exactly what's going on. It also gives us a little bit more of an insight to them. So, for example, if we can see a tenant that has insurance, whether that be, let's say it's income protection insurance, you also know that you've got a little bit of added security when recommending them to a landlord, that they have got the means to pay if something obviously goes wrong. And in addition to open banking, there are lots of other things that you can do to make sure that the income is verified. Again, some of these are fairly simple, some of them a little bit more in depth. One of the ones that we do on every application is we look at a distance check. So we look at how far from their employer does the tenant actually live, and is that viable? And the reason we do that is for lots of reasons. The first reason is we've seen on many occasions in the past, which is why we brought in this check several years ago, where somebody works somewhere that we can verify their income, they go and look to rent a property much further away, and the minute they obviously get granted the tenancy and they're going to move, they obviously then are all along planning, I think, to quit their job and obviously go and find another one. But that unfortunately doesn't give us any income for when they're moving into the new property. So it's a good check. The second reason that we do it is actually when fraud is kind of set up, most people kind of use it time and time again. And if people are using it, they move around into different areas. So they might do it in Peterborough, and then actually they're going to go a little bit further afield and sometimes don't necessarily go and change all of their kind of validation information that sits behind it, because it's not easy to create it every time. One of the other big checks we do is we always look at website and web domains. So if somebody says they work at the Lettings Hub, we check that the information that we have matches exactly the domain that the company used. So you can see there's four of my email addresses there. One of them is right, three of them are wrong, but they all look very similar. So that's a very classic, if somebody's going to fake who they work for, where this information is coming from. If you received a reference back from me at one of my other addresses, it would look very legitimate. So one of the other things we do is we always check how old that domain is. When was it created? Has it been maintained? That's where we stop fraud on a daily basis, where people have created and set up a fake website. Actually very easy to do, you know, the day before, the week before, the month before, yet portray that the company has been established for at least 2 years. Or we can see when we have a good click around and nosy around it, the links don't really work or everything else. So it's not just about establishing that it's there, it's about having a really good kind of look around and seeing what goes on. Okay, and then obviously if you are then relying on documents, so let's say that 24% of tenants where you're now potentially relying on documents, if you can't get valid income information or rental information from the employer or pension company or self-employment, etc., you might then be relying on documents like payslips. So the key thing here is to make sure that you are doing beyond surface level checks. We ask for 3 months payslips, not just because we want to see 3 months worth. Actually, it's really important we actually see what's going on right now, not actually maybe what happened always in the past. Although with referencing, we are really using previous behavior or what's happened in the past to kind of predict what kind of happens in the future. But what we need to kind of do here is actually look at the consistency across the 3 months of payslips that have been provided, because that's often where it goes wrong. So as I've kind of put down here, if anybody wants to go and buy a payslip, you can. There are many websites around and you can do it online. And we're also pretty good now at spotting when people have done it. We even had a case not long ago where somebody had provided access to open banking, actually. And on there we could see and actually bought one for £36 the week before. So also just kind of keeping your eyes out on what's actually going on in someone's bank account becomes pretty important. But just a few tips on kind of some of the things to look for and some of the things that we spot. And one of the first things we do is obviously run it against our kind of standard payslip document system or library. But often there will be poor formatting, so columns that are misaligned, spacing inconsistencies throughout it, different colours being used, and varying text and fonts. Obviously, as I said before, we're looking to see if everything adds up. We've seen spelling mistakes. We have seen the pound sign not being totally consistent. We're also making sure it always has kind of a tax period, and they obviously run from April onwards, so getting the right one is pretty important. The basic pay and the totals are kind of the right way around. And even kind of having, you know, national insurance number and other things become really, really important. So you get pretty good at spotting what goes on. And the same with bank statements. That was actually one of the questions that came in. So we've added this slide in just to help really in terms of how do you spot it. Now, with a bank statement, I actually think in one way that's actually a little bit easier, because based on how many lines they have and how much data it actually has on one page, it's actually harder to fake. So we've used some here that we have had in. So again, spacing and alignment, especially if you're kind of copying and pasting and whatever else across them. Have a good read down the list. So for example, we've got this one here where it is missing an S from Sports Direct. We have dates that don't exist, such as the 31st of November, direct debits as an example on a weekend day, date consistency, and checking the font and everything, again, is really important. Now, banks have standard bank statements. So again, using a library of those to cross-check becomes really, really important. And an applicant that will provide you access to a bank statement but will not provide you access to open banking has got to be questioned, because you still see the same level of information. In fact, arguably, you can see a lot more, because you've got to see, or we've got to go down and find all of the incoming payments and the outgoing payments kind of manually in some ways. Where on open banking, it pulls through and extracts the information that we need. Okay, so will they look after your landlord's asset? Now, here, we're going backwards and forwards here. I suppose the main thing here is if you can't be always 100% sure. So how do you protect a landlord in that scenario? So we've already covered some of the ways you can ensure that a landlord referee is genuine. You can obviously do proof of ownership if they say they're a homeowner as well for a tenant, or ask for information that a landlord is obviously willing to talk to you about. But there are additional considerations that you can consider. So first of all, asking someone if they could get hold of a guarantor and get that guarantor's information if you have suspicions. Now, obviously, we know some people require a guarantor anyway, and actually fraudulent applicants will not. And the reason they won't is they understand how the system and the process works, and they understand how much they have to earn. And most of the time, they're picking fairly nice properties, etc., which become, you know, they're typically not going for a £300 bedsit. They're picking something, you know, quite nice. And they make sure that the income that they're faking will cover that. So requesting a guarantor, they often don't have a fake guarantor sat there behind the scenes that's willing to act for them. So that definitely can put them off. And if they say they haven't got a fake guarantor, or they haven't got a guarantor, you obviously could suggest that they then go and buy a professional guarantor. And again, it's seeing their appetite and going through another process where they obviously have to have a high level credit check and making sure that legitimate can also flag up things. Again, most fraudulent applicants act alone. They don't have a co-tenant. So again, asking if there's anybody else moving into the property and what you might find out about them in terms of what happened at viewing or what you might have been able to see online, etc., could be interesting. But you can always buy rent and legal protection. And rent and legal protection doesn't just cover the cost of paying the rent. It also covers any breach of tenancy. So if there is something that's happened, which is includes, you know, falsifying information to, you know, deceptively kind of get into the property in the first place, then you would have the protection to gain possession of that property. And you also now, we, for example, sell, and I'm sure there's other companies that do, just a legal only kind of policy, which is a much cheaper policy. We sell it out £3 per month. Lots of our customers are using it to kind of enhance their kind of service offering out in the market. And basically what it covers all the legal costs all the way through to bailiffs to get possession of a property if something goes wrong. It just doesn't cover the payment of the rent. So if you have a landlord that isn't particularly keen on paying for everything, then, you know, it's a good middle ground. And I suppose what you have to kind of remember now is if the average rent in the UK is pretty much now topping £1,300 per month, you're near enough granting a line of credit of over £15,000 when you're recommending that tenant to move into the property. So really, you need to just carefully think about what checks need to be done to recommend them for the property. And I suppose I would just ask anyone that is doing in-house, you've got to think that your negotiators often, and some of you probably are negotiators, you are really targeted and encouraged and applauded really for getting the deal and getting that property let, which we all understand is kind of how our industry works. You're not necessarily there to look for all the telltale signs, and fraud is obviously getting a lot more sophisticated all the time. And it's not just about somebody's ability as a person, it's the combination of the process, the data and the technology together. So some of these things you wouldn't consider doing yourself, I would just think about referencing in the same way. And then staying ahead of fraud, just to kind of come to kind of an ending. The key things that you need to ask yourself are your checks comprehensive enough to combat fraud? Because it is becoming a lot more sophisticated. And as things have moved on, what has changed in terms of what you've introduced into your checks, or what do you actually do? And do you actually use referencing as a kind of instruction winner in terms of talking to a landlord about the checks that you will make on the tenants that are moving into their property? So talk to your referencing provider to really understand what they do for you. And it might be at a certain level because that's what you want to pay or that's what they do. So again, there's no reason you can't do supplementary checks on top of that. And obviously you have to match your product and what you want really to your risk appetite as a business, the brand standard that you kind of want to operate in the sector. And the best thing I can say is imagine yourself explaining a bad situation to one of your very best landlords. And if they ask you the question, you know, what checks did you do and how did you do it? Because landlords become fantastic detectives in this type of situation and take to Google and online to find out what they can find out themselves. Sometimes we've had a situation where I had this tenant and then, you know, we told them that we used, you know, the lettings hub or whoever for referencing, and that really, you know, put them off and we lost the deal. Now, actually, that's because they'll often ask you who you use for referencing, because in the main, they're hoping that you either use a easy process for them to get through or you do it in-house because it's an easier target for them. So don't just think it's because they've had a bad experience in the past and, you know, the referencing company's done something wrong. Often it will be the person trying to navigate the best letting agent, etc. And don't forget, things move and change all of the time. So we hear a lot about AI and it will definitely change the world of fraud all over again. So we very much need to keep evolving and keep enhancing the tools to stamp it out. Our aim is to always be one step ahead of it. And you can obviously keep up to date with, you know, things that we do on LinkedIn or hopefully on our website or box information that we publish all the time. Because like I mentioned at the beginning, it's a passion of mine to try and protect people. And don't underestimate kind of human contact. You know, all of our staff are trained. So when we talk to a tenant, even when they're filling in that application form, we're on the alert for what questions they're asking and why, and we can put a flag on a case to kind of go, just double check this one down the line, because some of the questions they're asking at this point in time are a little bit suspicious. Obviously, every referencing company has their own kind of Coca-Cola formula, I suppose. There is not one standard that kind of gets operated on across all of the referencing companies in the UK. I wish there was, actually. I wish there was a minimum that we all had to work to, because I think that would very much help protect everybody. Thank you very much for all of you that have tuned in. And also, if you have any questions that you would really like to ask, please just kind of drop them into the comments or make contact with us, because we would be more than happy to help you.
To ensure you never miss an episode of Let's Talk Let's, please follow us on Spotify or wherever you listen to your podcast. And if you like it, please obviously give us a review. Thank you for listening.
Let's Talk Let's, an original podcast from the Lettings Hub.